This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
Well, there are a couple of people that are fairly new, that are new here and new to meditation, and I'm going to assume that there's some people here new to Buddhist teachings as well. Am I right? Yeah, that's fine. The good thing I have discovered about this is that you don't need to know a whole bunch. I get a lot of phone calls from people saying, well, what's the appropriate class to come to? What should I come to if I don't know anything? And a lot of times it can seem daunting because Buddhism is full of, you know, it seems like unending lists and categories and this and okay and that's inside and that and then comes that. And it can be daunting, but I would like to invite you this evening just to listen to the particular qualities that I'm going to talk about and not worry so much about where they fit into this grand scheme of lists and things. I want to talk about something that's known as the seven factors of awakening. Don't get spooked already. So, and I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to start with a story. A couple of years ago, I went on a month-long retreat up at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Marin County, which is a meditation center that is in our lineage, and there's a lot of teachers up there, and that's pretty much all they do, have long residential retreats. They have short residential retreats, they have day-longs, but it's a place you can go and get some experience with extended practice, more than a half an hour or a day. So I went up there for a month, and I don't know if any of you have retreat experience, but prior to that time I went, my experience going into a retreat was difficulties. For the first few days, it was uncomfortable. There's the sleepiness of the first couple of days, and you're just nodding off, and then my brain would just like, wah, 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 nonstop, and you have no distractions. You know, a deer walking by is like, oh my God, look. You know, that's like very exciting. Or you stand there and watch the squirrels play. Because there's nothing else going on. So these little things become very big. So there's a lot of time for your mind just to show up. And my experience up until that time had been a lot of discomfort on retreat. But this time, I kind of just like eased right into it. And it was quite pleasant. It was really, there was a sense of ease right off the bat. And I started immediately going, okay, what am I doing wrong? But I let that go. And you meet, when you're on a retreat, you get to meet with a teacher every couple of days and check in, and they ask you how it's going and you know, make sure you're not totally off kilter, and they offer some suggestions for working with whatever's coming up for you. So the teachers were saying, yeah, you're fine. You know, it'll pass, but it's fine. So each evening, there's a Dharma talk. And this one evening, the teacher was giving a talk on the seven factors of awakening. And in the scheme of things, these are part of the four foundations of mindfulness. And I don't know if I had ever given them much heed before. I mean, I knew what they were, and I knew, okay, mindfulness and this, but I never really thought that they were applicable to me for some reason. So I'm sitting there, and I'm listening to the teacher, and she's talking about it's mindfulness, and it's investigation, and it's effort, and it's joy, and it's tranquility, and it's concentration, and it's equanimity. And as she's going through each of these qualities, factors, and she's explaining what they are, I'm like, I've got that. I feel that. I feel that. I feel that. I feel, and I had them all. And she's like, now don't make it a list that you check things off. But I'm like, but I do. I got that. I got that. And I freaked the fuck out. I just was like, Because I don't know what it was, but I thought that if you experienced these seven factors of awakening, you were going to pop into enlightenment, like, immediately. And I'm like, no, this can't be true. This, you know, and it's like, not me. It can't be true for me. I was so freaked out. I mean, it was really weird. I told you, it was really weird. I actually signed up to see a teacher in between my regular teacher days. They have an emergency teacher list, so if you need to talk to someone before you're... So I signed up, and there, actually, I went up, and all her slots were full, and I was like... And then I kind of walk by later in the day, because you look at bulletin boards when you can't talk for days. And somebody had canceled, and I was so excited, and I went in. And she went through them with me one by one, and she said, are you mindful of what's going on in this moment? Have you been mindful? Uh-huh, I had. Okay. You know, and did you experience joy? I did. And so she just broke it down. It wasn't that it was this big thing that was going to swoop in, but it was... Each of these were qualities that were available to me. And I had experienced each of them. Not that I was enlightened by any way, shape, or form, or imagination. And that's not what it means. What this stuff is the Buddha taught these qualities, and he says, these are the qualities that need to be present for you to attain liberation. So it's not that if you recognize them in your life, it's like, pop, there you go. So it was like a real shifting for me. And I think it's very important to talk about this stuff, because so often, and recently it seems like, I've been hearing a lot about like the hindrances and the struggle and suffering and greed, hatred, delusion, aversion, which is all very important. It's very important to see what our suffering looks like, what our discomfort looks like, because if we don't recognize it, there's no way to achieve liberation. But it's also very important to know what freedom from suffering looks like, so that when you experience it, you know it. Because the Buddha admonishes us, when you know it, or to cultivate those wholesome qualities. If you don't know what they look like, if you don't know what they feel like, it's really hard to cultivate them. And I bet when you really pay attention, you can probably find them in each of your own lives. Not maybe necessarily to a broad extent, but I like to believe that each of us have a flavor, a taste of each of these. Some more than other. Some of them more than others. And it's kind of what I found with so many of these lists of qualities that the Buddha suggests we cultivate to achieve enlightenment. Some are stronger in others, like in this other list of... again, qualities of the heart. There's generosity and wisdom and patience. And, you know, I may be patient, but I may not be generous. Or you may, you know, tell the truth, but you're greedy. So it's about finding out what's true for ourselves. And then learning how to cultivate the positive, cultivate the wholesome side of that, so that we can achieve some liberation from suffering. And by suffering, I mean discomfort. By suffering, I mean that which brings us discomfort. I'm stuck on that word, discomfort, you know. But that's what it is. It's that living as though life is just kind of out of kilter. You know, there's just something off. Suffering, I always like to think that's such a big word that people put over there and go, not me. But, yeah, I cause my own discomfort. So how do I do that? What does it look like? In that scheme of Buddhist teachings, the seven factors of awakening fall into the foundations of mindfulness, which is written about in this book, and which are the Buddha's teachings on how to develop present time awareness. And it starts with what we did tonight, breath and body awareness, and then goes up through being aware. So you're aware of your breath, you're aware of your body. We're so disconnected from our bodies. It's really important to start reconnecting so that we're whole. And then we become aware of things that are pleasant or unpleasant. How do we react? How do we respond to what our experience is? Is that pleasant or unpleasant? So often we don't know. So often we're just oblivious. And then we become aware of the next foundation is like being aware of what emotions are present. Is there anger? Is there happiness? Is there sadness? Is there grief? Or is our mind so busy stuffing things that we're oblivious to what our experience is? So it's about cultivating all this mindfulness. And then the last foundation of mindfulness, the fourth foundation, is about mindfulness of the dhammas or whatever's going on. Mindfulness of everything. And there's five lists of things inside the fourth foundation. But the two that I wanted to touch on tonight, there's the seven factors of the awakening. And then the other, the counterpoint to that, is one that most people are familiar with, which are the hindrances. It's those, Jack Kornfield calls them the demons on the path. It's what every single one of us in this room perhaps experienced tonight during meditation. But it's what we experience. It's craving for things to be different from the way they are. You know, craving for pleasure. It's like Danielle was saying, your mind was going, I want to fix this. I don't want to experience this. That's, you know, craving for pleasure. Pushing away discomfort. You know, another couple of hindrances are sleepiness. Anybody have that one? Mm. Yeah. Sleepiness, torpor, dullness, that just... The flip side of that, restlessness, you know? Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. So there's those two sides, and then doubt. I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? You know? It's Wednesday night in East Hollywood. Why am I here? So... we're really familiar with the hindrances. And the counterpoint to that are the seven factors of awakening. Mindfulness, joy, effort, energy, tranquility. And one of my teachers talks about mindfulness being the bridge between the hindrances and the seven factors of awakening. And I think it's a really nice image because we're usually lost in, not usually, but a large amount of time we're lost in the hindrances, or we're distracted, or we may not even be in the hindrances, but we're just not aware of what's going on. We're lost in our thinking, we're lost in our planning, we're lost in trying to make sure it comes out the way we want it to come out. Or pissed off that it didn't come out the way we wanted it to come out. And we're not really aware of what's going on in the present moment. And when we begin to start paying attention, and we begin to start paying attention by cultivating mindfulness, we begin to bridge over to these other qualities. You know, oh, look, here I'm suffering. And when you begin to recognize that you're in craving, you're in craving, or you're in discomfort, or you're restless, and you see it for what it is, then you can say, that's craving. Can I let go of that? And be mindful and be okay with what is here. Does this make sense? So the mindfulness is a bridge between the two. when we cultivate mindfulness, it's not about making things turn out a certain way. It's about learning how to let what's happening unfold. And when we start struggling, or we notice we're struggling, or notice we're distracted, or notice that we're tense, this is where the body scan sometimes is very helpful. We notice all of a sudden your shoulders are up around your neck. There are a lot of times physical signs. Then you can stop and come back to the present and let go and say, what's going on? Oh, there's a thought about that guy and what he said to me, or that dentist and that unnecessary root canal, which is my personal one right now. And if you've come to any of my classes, you may know it's been my personal favorite since October. So it's about learning to recognize what's going on and what's truly happening, and to kind of do a hands-off, kind of seeing what's arising and saying, oh, here comes some anger, or here, which is true for me when I think about that dentist. I'm consistently surprised about how 6 months later there's this anger that keeps showing up. But the mindfulness allows me to see this anger without getting attached to it. The hindrance would be, dentist, do you know how much money that root canal cost me? And then he says I have to get one in the tooth behind it, and it's a crown, and do you know how much that costs? You can see I can get into it like that. I'll talk to you after class if you want to know. So, but instead, that's the story. Instead, I'm like, oh gosh, look at that anger is still here. And it comes and it goes. And I don't have a charge around it, and I don't have a twinge around it, or maybe a twinge, but I don't get lost in that story, which is suffering for myself, which is discomfort, that anger, that angst, that how could I be so stupid, and why didn't I stand up for myself right away, and why did I believe him, and blah, blah, blah. You ever get into those conversations with yourself? That's suffering. That's discomfort. That's ew. So mindfulness, when we recognize that's aversion, that's a hindrance, wanting things to be the way they're not, anger, that's like, you know. When we recognize the hindrance and we're mindful, we can bridge over to, this is the way it is. I'm mindful of this. I don't need it to be different. It is this way. Can I recognize that anger and let go of the story? So this cultivation of mindfulness is incredibly important. That's why there's a big, thick book just on these four foundations, and there's a lot of footnotes in here. It's really important. Because without paying attention, without this mindfulness, I don't stand a chance. Because I'm deluded. I'm living in a world of they said, they shoulda, coulda, woulda. I was there for a large part of my life, and it wasn't pleasant. Because I had this, you know, this idea of what it was supposed to be like, and it wasn't. And mindfulness helps me let go, and I start cultivating, this is what it is. It's done on the cushion. This is your practice. This is your laboratory. This is when you come for a half an hour once a week or twice a week or however many times a week, and you watch your mind. And you watch that stuff arise and take you away, and then you recognize you're gone and you come back. This is your practice, so that you can get up and go outside and say and recognize when you're in your car, or when you're at work, or when you're with your friends, that you're lost somewhere and you come back. The Buddha said that nothing is more powerful to cause wholesome thoughts to arise and unwholesome thoughts to leave than mindfulness. Nothing is more powerful to cause wholesome thoughts to arise and unwholesome thoughts to leave than mindfulness. So the unwholesome thoughts that arise are stupid dentist, the anger. The anger, it's not the anger, it's the reaction to the anger, is the unwholesome thought. And I want to clarify, because I think it can be a little fuzzy, because wholesome and unwholesome is always that Pollyanna kind of experience or thought. But wholesome does not mean pleasant all the time. Wholesome does not mean what we want. Wholesome means what's true and what is. You know? Unwholesome doesn't mean bad and unpleasant. It means delusional. It means not seeing things for the way they really are. So it's important to this cultivation of mindfulness. Really important. It's that first factor of the seven factors of awakening. You've got to be mindful to have that liberation. Can't do it without it. Really difficult, I think. My experience. You don't have to believe me. But my experience is, unless I'm awake, unless I'm paying attention, I don't get it. A couple of years ago, my New Year's Eve intention was to have my mind and reality in the same room. Sometimes it's a challenge. Sometimes it's a challenge. So. And then Gil, my teacher, said, sometimes the way to look at this is to think of the hindrances as a preoccupation with everything. And the awakening factors is the freedom from preoccupation. We're not so tightly wound up. I love that phrase, we wear the world as a loose garment. Here comes anger. Okay. Doesn't mean I'm a bad person. Here comes sadness. Doesn't mean I'm not doing it right. Here comes happiness. Oh, doesn't mean I don't deserve happiness. I don't deserve happiness. No, it's whatever arises is there. Can I allow it to be? And the second factor of awakening is investigation. And in investigation, I've heard this word discussed a lot lately too. And instead of the investigation, I think maybe a different way of looking at it is differentiation or discernment. Because investigation, my experience around that word, it means figuring it out. You know, like a detective, figuring, I gotta figure this out, I gotta solve this crime, blah, blah, blah. But instead of just, it's differentiation, it's kind of what I was talking about with recognizing, here comes anger around the dentist. Oh, look, that story of 6 months ago still causes this to rise. Wow, look at that. That's investigating. That's discerning. That's differentiating. It's when we get caught up in the story of that SOB. And I bet all the crowns he did weren't necessary either. You know, I'm going to go back for it. But that's where the distraction, we go there. Then we start to see, oh, that's that story. This is real experience. This is present time experience. That's what investigation is. What is this going on right now? Is this real or is this story? Is this me not wanting to feel this? Is this me not wanting to let go of this pleasant time, of this pleasant experience? I've had that. I've had that for both. I've been sitting there and something pleasant is I'm having a pleasant experience. I don't know, it's not even necessarily in meditation. But it's just, I don't want to let it go. And I feel like, you know, I'm pulling it back and pulling it back. You know, it's like when you have a party that's just perfect and all the right guests and all the right food and everything's just perfect. You ever have those experiences or you go out with some friends and it's like you couldn't have planned it. It was so good. So what do? You try and plan it so that you repeat it. And you've got an attachment to this pleasant experience that you have, and you'll be damned if you're not going to make it happen. Yeah. And what do you mean you can't come? You have to be there. You had that great joke. You know, you told that good story. It's not going to be the same. And then we find out, oh, I'm caught up in that. And mindfulness supports the investigation. So you need to cultivate the mindfulness so that you can start investigating. These factors are, as in so much of Buddhism, they can be looked at in a linear way. You have mindfulness supporting the discernment, the wisdom, to see what's really going on. But they're also, you know, they support each other, and you can go to one, and then you can see from there. So it doesn't have to be this linear march. They also talk about it as holographic. I hear that word used a lot too, that they all contain each other. You know, if you've ever seen a hologram, that it's a laser image, and if you break it in half, the entire picture is in both halves, and if you break it again, the entire picture is in all four halves. My husband makes holograms. You can come back to my house and I'll show you. But it's really, this whole thing is, each of these factors are contained and support the other factors. So it's really lovely. It's not a path that you have to get this one before you can move on to the next. It's a continual deepening, is what my experience has been. You get it and you taste it, and then you continue the path, and it gets deeper and deeper, and it's just lovely, my opinion. So anyway, so you see how this mindfulness supports this investigation, this discernment, this wisdom. I had an experience. There's some really exciting things going on. We're gonna open a center in San Francisco, and against the stream in San Francisco. Yes. And Noah and I are going up there on Friday, and we're going to talk to the group up there, and it's really exciting, and we've been really jazzed about this for a couple of weeks. And yesterday, the thought came through my head, what if? You know, what if you fill in the blanks? You can all make it up. I'm sure you can come up with a what if to make it crash and burn. And make it be sad and me look bad, you know, because that's what it's all about. Ultimately, what if I look bad? So that thought starts marching in. And what happens is there's a little bit of Velcro, a little bit of sticky glue, you know, and I start getting into that, but then recognizing what that is. Oh, look at that. It's that craving to a specific outcome. Can I let go of that and just go, oh, look at that, there it goes, and I let it go. And there's a little twinge, and there's a little poke, but it doesn't last. If you're mindful and you are willing to investigate, the distractions can be let go of. And then you come back to the enjoyment of the, ooh, this is a fun idea. So it's really about paying attention. And of course, and this just beautifully leads into the next factor. You started at 7:30, right? Holy moly, I got 10 minutes left. Anyway, this goes into the next factor, which is effort and energy and persistence and keeping it up. You don't get this by going, okay, I'm going to do this today. You have to, as with anything, continued effort is what pays off. It's like you don't go to the gym once a week. Or if you go once a week, you go once a week. Or you go every day, but you don't go and then stop. The example I heard was, if you want to boil water, you don't go into the kitchen and then turn on the water and watch it for a while and then turn it off and leave. And then come back and turn it on again. You know, it's not an effective way to boil water. It's the same type of thing with this. Yeah, there's a little bit of warmth there, but those are going to be some not hard-boiled eggs, and those little children are going to be really disappointed on Easter. Anyway, anyway. So boiling water, persistence, energy, right? Effort is one of the factors on the Eightfold Path, on the path to, again, another road to achieving liberation from suffering, from achieving some freedom from this discomfort. So it's really making the effort. Like making the effort to come and meditate for 66 days in a row. You know, there's a challenge that Aura will talk about at the end of class. But how much are you willing to do? How much time on the cushion? How much effort? Because for me, it can be so seductive. Those distractions can be so seductive. Self-pity used to be so warm and inviting. Ooh, poor me. It was such a place of comfort for so many years. To drag yourself out of that and go, no, that's just, you know, my way of escape. It's a little bit of a delusion, a little bit of an aversion, you know? And to once you see it for what it is, seeing these hindrances, seeing Mara, the traditional story about seeing these things show up as personified as this character Mara in the scriptures. And Buddha says, I see you for what you are, Mara, and it disappears. And that's been my experience, that there's some stickiness around it, but the more effort I bring to seeing it for what it is, the easier it disappears. And I'm happy to say that self-pity doesn't stick at all anymore. There's other things that stick, but that doesn't, you know. But that willingness to let go. And when you're on the cushion and you have that obsessive thought, or when you're walking around and that obsessive thought comes, you let it go again and again and again, over and over and over. There's not a magic number of times. Well, if I do it 7,500 times, maybe you have to do it 7,600 times. Be willing. And as I always believe that there are some places that you have been able to let it go. So don't focus on the worst. Be with what your experience is in this moment. So. And then, what happens when you're holding this continual effort and paying attention and allowing what happens to happen, there's this sense of well-being that arises. The usual translation is rapture, and that's just like really out there for me, because there's a rapture over here. That means you're leaving the planet. And then there's some other rapture over here, which is, you know, so I like joy. It's much more accessible. Or a sense of well-being. And, you know, it's about, and maybe all of you have had it, maybe you haven't had it. It's for me, it's simple. And I think this is a word I want to stress about all of these things. These are very simple. They're not rocket science. There were no rockets in Buddhist days, so it can't be rocket science. Very simple. It's being in the present moment. My sense of well-being, I mean, the first time I experienced it was when I was watching my cats play, and all of a sudden I realized I wasn't worried about the 127 things on my to-do list that day, because I was in the moment. You know, Sunday, it was a gorgeous day, and I was doing all these errands, and I was recognizing this sense of well-being. It's like, oh, I have to go to the 99-cent store, and then I have to go to I went to yoga, and I did this, and it was just in the present moment. And I had that again this morning. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool in the present moment. And I thought about a bunch of people from high school were talking about getting together tomorrow for lunch. It's in the Bronx. I can't go, but I started thinking about our high school reunion next year, and then I started remembering a funny story about Sister Anna Louisa in sophomore year, and I started telling the story with my New York accent, and all of a sudden I noticed I was telling the story to all these people over and over again with a New York accent in my mind. And there was no sense of well-being. There was a sense of, I got to make sure I tell this story right, because it's going to be really funny, and I want them to laugh, and I want them... And I was caught up in craving. And then that sense of well-being was gone. It was funny, but then it was like, oh, look at that. Can I let go and come back to the present moment? Oh, yeah, I can. Okay. So there's that joy. It's like being caught... Have you ever done a hobby, playing music or knitting or doing something that your time flies when you're having fun? Because you're so absorbed in the now. That's the sense of joy that comes when you cultivate these other factors. And then there's a sense of tranquility. The next factor is tranquility, of being at peace with what arises. For me, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, because you have that real sense of one of the characteristics of existence is that things are impermanent. and you know everything passes. And so I'm mindful, I'm making the effort to let go of attachment, I'm sitting in the present moment, and I can be tranquil. It's not being blown about by the eight worldly winds of praise and blame and gain and loss, because those happen to everyone. Shit happens to everyone. And good shit and bad shit. You know? And can I just be there? Tranquilly. Not doormatly, but tranquilly. And then the final factor is, oh, I missed one, concentration. No, that's the next one. And actually, concentration is being totally present, mind, body, emotion, all kind of working together. It's like when, if you've got a flavor of that as in the meditation, the breath body, you know, the breath and the body breathing together, all just experiencing. And this comes with practice. It doesn't, it's not overnight, but you can get little tastes of it. So the concentration is absolutely in the present moment. Emotion, feeling tone, breath, body, all the foundation, all the factors there, not distracted, not being pulled away by, you know, funny stories about Sister Ana Luisa in high school or what if. It's being, watching that come and letting it go. And then that sense of equanimity, which is the last factor, which is in this case, is the it means an evenness of the mind. Not being knocked about, you know, being appropriate in all areas. The mind stays balanced with whatever arises. And in this book he says, equanimity and mental balance are the consummation of the other six awakening factors, in which equanimity in regard to all conditioned phenomena marks the culmination of the series and the suitable mental condition for the event of realization, which is liberation or awakening. And the mind is no longer distracted. If a pain arises, it's a pain. If joy arises, it's joy. So, and it's just... And one last example that I think is really nice, the Buddha talks about, in a peaked house, all the rafters go together to the peak. So these seven factors of awakening are like the rafters in a house, in a peak. The peak is the awakening, and they all support each other, and they all support this liberation. And it's really important to recognize what they look like for you in your life, so that you can cultivate them, so that you can say, hey, this is what that tastes like. This is real for me. Watching my pet or my loved one, you know, sleeping or laughing. Can I be with that in the moment without anything else? That's a flavor of this liberation that I think is available to everyone and is really important for everyone to see. And as we always like to say, don't believe me just because I said it. Try it for yourself and see if it's true.